With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hi, Podditors. I hope you're all doing okay in this very weird time. You're all staying safe and all your family, etc., are safe. This episode that's going out today was one that I recorded pre-pandemic, so it was right at the beginning of March, and it is with Louise Choen, who was the VP at Bumble for their marketing strategy and has had a really interesting and cool career. And she's a woman that I met at a different event and heard her speak and just thought she'd be such a great person to have on the podcast to encourage us to think about what success really means, challenge the way that we change our careers and to speak up and, you know, really go for it when it comes to getting the kind of life that we want to have. So I really hope you enjoy the episode. And as always, please do rate, review and subscribe. I'm also working from home with my boyfriend at the minute, and I think he is on a Skype call or a Zoom call or whatever it is. So if you can hear him in the background, I'm really sorry about that. But yeah, enjoy. Bye. Hi guys, and welcome to Adulting. Today I'm joined by Louise Choen.
Hello.
How are you doing?
I'm great. I think the two coffees we had earlier will definitely be helpful for the next hour.
I agree.
Like chat.
Thank you so much for coming to join me and having coffee with me and getting me really hyped up because I don't know what's going to happen now. But for people who don't know who you are, can you tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do?
Yeah, sure. So firstly, thanks so much for inviting me on. I always feel so honoured and I feel like it's such a privilege when I get invited to speak on these sorts of things because I've had such a lucky career and I felt really fortunate in everything that I've done. And so being able to tell that story and hopefully inspire others is always something that, yeah, I feel really grateful for, so thank you. I'm probably most well-known career-wise for what I've just finished doing, which was working at Bumble, the social networking app. I was the vice president of international marketing and communications for close to about four and a half years. My job there was to launch Bumble in the UK. And then subsequently launch us in various other markets in Europe and oversee our brilliant teams that we had in Asia and Australia as well. My kind of predominant focus of that role was go-to-market strategy, communications, creative campaigns, growing the team, scaling the teams. And so really was in my dream job when it came to activating across various marketing channels. But more importantly, I was working for a brand that was all about female empowerment. So Bumble's whole mantra is encouraging women to go after what they want. And that was something that I felt really strongly about in my identity. And I felt like I had done most of my life and throughout my career. So it was such a treat to be able to kind of pay that message forward to other women. And before then, I had been living in Los Angeles. I was a publicist to some celebrities that you might know. And previous to that, I worked in communications at a company called Freud's, which is one of the most the strongest PR agencies in the world, really. And yeah, before that, studied sociology at Bristol. So really have had a bit of a chaotic and messy career in terms of its trajectory, but I'm a real advocate of following your instinct and intuition in terms of your next step as opposed to crafting out a master plan.
It's an amazing career to have had for anyone, but you're really young and the position you're in at Bumble was very high up and you really kind of transformed the company from what I've heard of what you did. Like you really, really did bring them to the fore and make them what they are today. Like everyone knows what Bumble is, which is amazing. But I wanted to pick on, so it's really interesting. You said right at the beginning, I had a very lucky and very fortunate career. And I wanted to ask you if that's imposter syndrome leaking out or if you genuinely do think you've been lucky.
I think it's a combination. When I talk about luck, I really believe that you create your own luck. But the luck that I received was people believing in me. So I was lucky enough to turn up at the right time in front of the right person in Los Angeles at a time when she needed someone to run the division and the team. Now, there's an element of that that I think is luck or coincidence, whatever you want to call it. And then there's an element of it that is about me showing up and me following that motivation and that drive and her being in a position where she could offer me opportunity. But I think ultimately, yeah, imposter syndrome is very real, I think, especially for women nowadays. I don't think you'd ever hear a man be like, I was so lucky to be successful. They'd just be like, I worked really hard and I got what I deserved. But I actually don't mind that syndrome in myself because it actually gives me the drive and the reason to kind of keep pushing. I think when you feel a little bit like the underdog, your motivation to become the overdog, is that even a word?
I know what you mean.
the desire to be the kind of lead and quash that stereotype is even greater.
What motivated you to go out to LA in the first place? Like, once you finished your degree, what was your idea of what your career was going to be? Did you have any kind of foresight that you would be sat here now moving on to perhaps your third iteration of a career or your fourth even?
No, not at all. And I think it's actually really dangerous for young people in terms of when I was at university, you know, you go, or at school even, you go to a careers advisor. And these people have had no experience in any other role apart from being the careers advisor. So you're sat in front of someone that's like, okay, you're quite bad at math, so like, don't be a banker. You're quite good at English, so maybe be a journalist. And really don't have any experience of all of the wealth of opportunity out there from various different industries. I also think there wasn't enough education or understanding for me of the kind of plethora of different industries there were. I didn't even know that you could be an engineer when I was at university. I didn't even understand, if you studied chemistry, the kind of different roles that you could do. I thought that you'd always have to go into like chemical engineering or become a scientist, whereas actually, you know, there are so many different opportunities with these subjects. But at the time, I watched a lot of documentaries and I thought storytelling was something that I really liked. I had a big imagination and so just decided that I would try and go into making documentaries, whatever that meant. And I had a friend's father that worked at a production studio called Pioneer Productions. And they gave me a receptionist job. So I was like organizing all the meetings. And actually the CEO of the company, I must have been like 23 or something, came up to me one day and was like, we love having you in the company, but I really don't think you should be here. And I was like, what? This is like my favorite job ever. And he was like, you're great answering the phones and your cup of coffee is banging, but you're a real communicator. And every time someone comes in the room, they engage with you. They want to like take your information. You know, this is a real skill. And he was actually kind enough to be like, I think you should maybe work in PR because it's so about relationships and storytelling and engaging people in your narrative of thought. So I had a little look at PR agencies, and in like traditional me sense, I was like, best PR agency in London because nothing else would do. And it said Freud's. And so I looked at their client list and it was something that was interesting. And so I managed to just email their work experience email and get a placement there. And that's sort of how that started.
And did you always have this kind of gumption and feel that you could do it? Because I feel like I'm a bit like you in that I will just, once I find out I want to do something, I'm like, oh, I'll look into that. I won't necessarily go through the rigmarole of wondering why I can't. And in some ways, that kind of opens up a door because you haven't almost gone through the loops. Like sometimes I get things because I don't go through the right way of doing it and I just go bulldoze my way in. And in a funny way, that can really work in your favour. Did you find that that was something throughout your career where actually just standing up and putting yourself in front of people was the best thing you could do, even if you weren't overly qualified for it?
Yeah, I don't really look at kind of even the word qualification. It's like we draft these specs for what we need a job to be. And we, you know, even today, it's like you need to have a minimum of 10 years of experience. Now, if you have 4 years on the front line, executing everything to the nth degree with a team of 50 and you're still 28, you're gonna be just as well, quote unquote, qualified as someone that sat in the back office but has worked for 12 years. And I think the best companies are now hiring people on attitude, on work ethic, on creative inspiration, and actually all of these new terms that traditionally and still with a number of companies today weren't seen as skill sets. And I think I was, you know, in a position, especially at Freud's, where I knew that I was junior, and so I was really keen to learn. And there were a lot of people in the agency that kind of saw my attitude, which was like, sit me in every meeting. Would you be so kind as to spend half an hour with me at 6:30? And I asked every single day. I was like, can I see this? Can I have a look at that document? Can I? And it was just, it came from a place of being curious. But ultimately, I was there for a couple of years and was really, it was really clear to me that they had a hierarchical structure that meant, you know, you get promoted every year. And that just wasn't something that I agreed with. I think inherently, you know, I believe in meritocracy and people should be rewarded on their work as opposed to their time put in. And had really embarrassingly just watched a lot of shows on LA and was like, I'm going to go live my dream there. I wish I could say it was something like much cooler, but no.
Did you find that working in PR, because it's a weird, I always think this about PR, but it's a funny relationship because you'll be working with clients who maybe are really famous or celebrities. And I can imagine that when you're on one side of the fence, probably looking at numbers, the things that are being sent, the money they're making, maybe in relation to the job that they're doing. Do you think that gave you a bit of kind of vim to want to look out for more? Because I assume a starting PR salary isn't that great. And
Yeah, actually, that's a great question. I think the perks that you get with working as a publicist and in that kind of industry are so sexy when you're that age. You know, you're going to these events and you're walking down, I was like, you know, doing premieres in Leicester Square and taking celebrities and getting them to be interviewed by like Now TV. And for me, that was like the coolest thing ever. So I was like, I don't mind taking a low salary. And I was actually living at home with my parents because, you know, on those salaries, you can't really afford to live in London. And I think I also had the attitude of like, I haven't earned more than this right now. And it took me 2 or 3 years to get to a point of recognizing the value I was adding before I thought this structure and this kind of corporate environment isn't really for me. And I feel like if somebody really believes in me and gives me a greater space to have opportunity, I can do more. And I was, you know, I was just, I keep saying lucky, but I was lucky that a woman in LA, when I flew out there, British woman, was like, you remind me of me and I'm going to give you a shot. And wow. I think more people should give more people chances.
So you just mentioned that obviously that you got to live at home, which is a massive privilege. And I think that sometimes, I think we're living in a bit of a duplicitous time in that on the one hand, everyone wants to be successful straight away. So people want to finish uni and be on like 50K from the get-go.
Right.
And because we see, especially people like influencers, who it looks like they're having this imminent success or that, you know, they've woke up one morning and had it all. And whilst the annoying thing is, especially with creative industries, like it generally does take a bit of privilege to allow you to have that time to be on like a lower salary.
Absolutely.
But I think it is also important that people, we don't try to champion this idea of being successful at such a young age. I mean, you are really successful at a very young age, but I also imagine that for you, you're still in the very beginning of your career in your eyes in terms of like what you're going on to do. Mm-hmm. But how, I kind of want to push back against this idea that we all have to have done it all by 25 or...
Absolutely.
Because I feel like that's where we're at the minute, like hustle culture and productivity and grind and all of this stuff is becoming really overwhelming.
Yeah, but also not assuming that people have done it all because there's a label or a title. So, you know, if somebody looks at me and says to your point that you just mentioned, like, you know, you're really successful for your age, that's probably based on the fact that I had a vice president title. I remember when they promoted me and I was like, guys, you don't need to give me, like, that's just like a really silly title. Like, just let me get on and do my job. And I think a lot of people are like, wow, you know, you were the VP. And I kind of say to them, like, why does this title matter? Like, I'm not the president of the United States. Like, let's just take a step back for a second. Like, I really care about my job. I really care about my team. And I just want to deliver good work that makes me feel inspired and hopefully inspires other people. And similar to the work that you do, whether people call you an influencer or they say you've got millions and millions of hits on this podcast or whatever those numbers are, we need to stop placing them as people's identities and then looking up to those people in terms of inspiration because of that. People need to be inspired and aspiring based on people's outlook and their attitudes and their visions, because those are the things that are going to drive you at a younger age. You're just going to feel unsatisfied if you're not a VP at 32, if you're completely focused on those labels and those titles. And it's something that I've really had to coach myself into, like, you know, why do you have to keep getting these promotions? And really all that matters is that you can live a nice life within your means and that people around you are kind and are respectful to you. And I think you're right that this younger generation, there's so much pressure to have a million followers on Instagram if you're an influencer, or, you know, be a director by the time you're 28. And actually none of that matters. All that matters is that you have good people around you and that you enjoy what you do.
Totally. Although I do have to say, Louise has been very sweet, because everyone that I've ever met, so when I first met Louise, it was literally like a couple of weeks ago, and I was like, oh, I'm doing this thing with Louise Tran, and they were like, she is amazing. And everyone I've ever spoken to,
I paid them,
from like my manager to someone that I used to like live above me to someone else, they were like, she literally transformed Bumble. Like, honestly, you have like a legacy, so you're being,
oh, that's very sweet.
It isn't just your title. I do think that people do look at you, and evidently you do work really hard, and you have really created a name for yourself as someone that's very worthy of.
Thank you. I think that's super kind. I think I was given a lot of opportunity. You know, Whitney gave me and the team, you know, there was a big team around me that was doing just as much of the work as I was. And she really gave me an opportunity to lead and gave me the space to drive the brand forward. And I think one of my biggest pieces of advice to young women or any woman today is work for somebody that inspires you and that can teach you rather than the brand. And I was lucky enough to get both. But now, as I'm kind of exploring my next opportunity, I've turned down brilliant roles recently at big consumer brands because I wasn't inspired by the person that interviewed me. And I think that is the most important thing, that I have someone to learn from and that can give me the space to grow. And, you know, I think it's the same, I'm sure, for all the mothers out there that perhaps don't work, is that it's the same way that they bring up children, you know, giving these young people confidence in the space to be exactly the kind of best potential that they can be.
It's interesting as well, because a minute ago you kind of touched on success, which I guess, interestingly, we sometimes don't seem to see success in the way that you were deeming it, which is like, if you've got your friends around you that love you and you feel happy and everything's kind of in place and you can live the life you want within your means, mm-hmm. that's successful. And sometimes we conflate success and the dream job as like one thing. Mm-hmm. So if you've got the perfect job, then you're successful, whereas actually all the other stuff could have gone to shit. So you could have the dream job, in inverted commas, but be crying every day and like not feel very happy and be exhausted. And I think that kind of holistic approach is coming in, and we talk about it more. But I do think for a time, especially when I was growing up, I do still think it now as well, it was about like no sleep. That's what, that's what people who got it, that's what they do. And then you make £1 million. And it's like, actually, do I want to be a millionaire at 25 if I'm not happy? I don't think that's more successful.
We equate success with a finite figure of your salary and the amount of designer goods you can buy and the nice holidays you go on. I know plenty of people that are earning big salaries that are depressed and alone and isolated and question everything and have to validate themselves through acquisition of material goods. Instead of sitting at the pub, me and you, talking endlessly like we do, which is probably really annoying for everyone around us, about nothingness. Like, that's actually what joy is. And I agree with you. This glamorization of work ethic is really, really frightening. And we talk about this work-life balance, like that it can't exist. There's 5 days of work and 2 days of relaxation. So in its very essence, it doesn't balance out. So I think trying to figure out how, and actually Vanessa Kingori from Vogue once said this to me, publishing director, she said it's about work-life blend and finding a job that you feel passionate about and the people in the job with you inspire you, so that you don't feel like you're going into work. And at the weekend, you might see the people that you work with. This traditional sense of do not, you know, hang out with your work colleagues because it's unprofessional is just so archaic and ineffective.
Yeah, and it's interesting because obviously, as you just said, like the majority of our time is actually spent working. So it's like the majority of your life. And we were just talking before this briefly earlier about how now we, and you said this too a minute ago, about how your job becomes so much of your identity. If you watch like any dating show, any show on TV, it'll be like, Louise, 32, blah, 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 whatever your job is. So you have those three things that are your identity, your name, your age, and then what you do. And you made the salient point of saying, like, it's funny when people say, oh, I'm not, my career isn't my life. And it's like, but it kind of is because you do have to spend so much time working. And we label each other by their jobs. I'm always, it's a really bad habit, but I will ask someone, what are they like, blah, 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 and what do they do? Mm. And we make snap judgments on that idea, even though, as we just discussed, someone could work in Tesco's and that might be their dream career because it gives them that work-life blend.
Right.
They can see their family. They feel really happy and they earn enough money to buy the stuff they need. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I totally agree. And I also think, like, you know, there's and I want to mention this woman because she's amazing. There's a woman that owns the shampoo shop opposite me. She calls it the shampoo shop. That's not me. It's a hairdresser's. But she's like, come into my shampoo shop. I'm like, it's a hairdresser. Let me rebrand your shop.
I quite like that.
Yeah, she's amazing. And she's had it for so many years. And she got offered to open, it's people queue to get their haircut by her. And she's fantastic. And her energy and her aura is just amazing. You walk in and she's like, sit down on the sofa. Tell me about your marriage. Tell me about your boyfriend. You know, she brings out the wine. It's a real like community spot. I go there, like I get my haircut like 4 times a month. And she's like, you absolutely don't need your haircut. And I'm like, please talk to me. But she was offered various different opportunities to kind of scale the business. And she was like, no, I love the community that come in. I make enough money to support my children and eat out a couple of times a week. And I thought it was a really cool example of like more spaces and sites for her means more stress, which means less time with her children, which means less time eating out with her husband. And ultimately, those are the things that keep her happy. Mm-hmm. And she'd really considered her life and what makes her happy. And it was a real moment for me to recognise, like, we don't consider the assets around us that make us really happy. If I was to say to you, like, what are the 3 things, Nones, that really give you joy? What would you say?
When it's my family, but I feel like you have to say it first. When it's not cloudy, when it's really sunny outside, right. Fresh air, and my boyfriend.
Okay, so all three.
All three, yeah.
All three things. Yeah. And all things that give you, like, all that we want as humans is to love and to be loved.
Yeah.
So, like, why are we chasing these other dreams of, like, acquiring all this stuff to be successful? Like, it's more about what you love. Love, you know, they say love what you do and you'll never work a day in your life.
I agree with this, and I do agree wholeheartedly and fundamentally, and I was kind of talking about this before, about how I've learned that the things in life that make you happy are all the things that when I was younger, I was like, no, I always wanted to be that, like, live fast, die young, party, I'll sleep when I'm dead. Like, at uni, I was like, I don't need to tidy my room, life's too short. You know, I was like so like that.
Yeah.
And now as I've got older, I'm like, actually, if you get up really early in the morning and you like exercise and like you do just feel a million, all the things that are really, really boring and again, don't cost anything, do make you happier. But on the flip side, we live in this capitalist society where there is a threshold of money that you need to earn so that you're above the poverty line. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then you can feel like you can think about other things. But then there's also this other element of, you know, as women especially, if we're able to create financial autonomy and earn a lot more money, we can actually do, I mean, it depends on what the person is. But now I used to hate the idea of saying that I ever wanted to be rich because I thought it was really unladylike and I should never say that. Mm-hmm. And now I'm like, actually, I would like to make a lot of money because I can plug that money into things that I think are really important.
Yeah.
Like if I don't feel like I can trust in the systems or the legislation to do stuff, maybe I can do that myself by making a career that makes that much money.
And I think that's exactly, to go back to what we were talking about before, what we have the responsibility to do. Especially as women that were privileged enough to go to university and have that education and for me to live with my parents that lived just outside London. You know, I see that as a huge privilege. Mm. And I have, just as brands have, as they become more successful, I believe there's a duty and a responsibility when I get to a position to hire in people from backgrounds that perhaps hadn't had that access or spend time you know, crafting programs or initiatives that can give women that don't have those luxuries time, space, financial support to come into businesses like the ones that I work in. Most importantly, because you need a diverse workforce to create work for the diverse community that we're trying to reach, number one. Like, it's fundamentally useful for every business to have you know, it's bizarre that people are like, we have these quotas. It's like, you need a diverse workforce to be able to represent what the UK is, which is an incredibly cosmopolitan, colourful, diverse, brilliant, you know, nation. But I do think that women and men, you know, more men, to be honest, because more of them are in more successful positions, a duty to prioritise that. And I don't think it's been done enough.
No, and I do feel like women, maybe because it is so late for us, I mean, it's only in the last 50 or so years that women really have been coming to the fore and the forefront of these industries. And I do think that that shift has coincided with women taking the lead. And I wonder if that's because I went to talk the other day that my boyfriend actually, I'm sure he won't mind me saying, he's so sweet. So he did, it was for where he works, but he held like tackling the gender investment gap. And he had 5 women on a panel. He just introduced it. And one of the women was like, do you know what? We need to just hire more women, even if they're not good enough for the job, because so many men have got into those positions through nepotism, or because they had the right qualifications, or because they went to the right school. So she was like, I actually don't care now if I'm hiring women, but if because she was like, there just simply aren't enough women.
Yeah, I agree.
Who haven't got that. So she was like, I will hire someone, even if they're worse than the man now, because we have to really change the system. And the reason that I'm bringing this up is because I think right now, women who are at the top mostly have got there with a lot of struggle. So they have a different attitude towards, it's really, they really feel like they've earned it, and they really want to kind of play the, like, give back to the people who haven't been given that accessibility.
The only way to shift it for the next generation is to pay it forward. It's the only way, whether it's women, you know, whether it's any of the kind of minority groups that, that exist. I think if you're in a position of responsibility or leadership, you have a duty to bring people in that can diversify your workforce. It has to be done. And if they are not as strong, training and support and chances need to be taken. I really believe you can train people in pretty much any skill. You can't train people in work ethic. And I think often you'll find that people that have not had as many chances as others have a much stronger, more resilient work ethic.
I want to ask you, we've talked about kind of all your successes and everything's gone really well. Have there been any moments in your career when you've kind of felt really concerned that you didn't know what your next term was going to be, or you didn't know if you were going to make it through, or what have been some of the bigger hurdles, or has it been quite smooth sailing?
Definitely has not been smooth sailing. And I would say right now is probably the most challenging part of my career, which actually I've never said out loud till now. I've sort of gone from job to job, and I've been fortunate enough to have a job in place by the time I've left the one before, or kind of felt that my time was ending, or been poached from a company and moved across very smoothly. And when I left Bumble at the back end of last year, I didn't have a job to go to. I'd been, you know, very mindful with my money, so I could afford to take a couple of months off. And now I'm consulting for various different businesses. But to go from working, you know, for over 10 years, you know, every day, and I worked, you know, every day when I was at Bumble especially, to kind of having a lot of free time to curate your own sort of business for the time being and navigate, do I want to go into another big brand? Do I want to start my own business? You know, I can probably consult for a few months, but really my joy and my real passion comes from leading a team and working in that environment. And I think that can be quite unsettling, as it is for anyone that doesn't know what their next move is. And I remember calling one of my best friends, Tara, who left her job at a big sports agency a couple of years ago. Now she's a gardener. And saying to her, did you feel a bit lost and a bit isolated? And you know, after working with lots of brilliant team members all day, every day, and really getting that validation and love in the office, to not having any, you know, we were saying this the other day, I was like going down to my coffee shop lady being like, how was your day? How was your evening? And she was like, literally go away. I have so much stuff to do. I don't want to talk to you. But I think it's taken a lot of training from my side to use this time really carefully to make sure that my next move is beneficial to my career. But on the flip side of that, having the financial pressure of knowing that I pretty much have to be, or have to have made a decision by the end of the month. And I think a lot of people go through that struggle and that concern that perhaps I need to take a job that is less than the step forward that I want. We spoke earlier, I'm you know, in some exciting stages for some opportunities I really want, but they also might not come off. And I have to be ready and aware of that. And I'm sort of putting in place this plan B and plan C and plan D, just in case.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
a lot of the time on this podcast, normally when I'm talking about finance, I speak to people who talk about how women are very risk averse. But it sounds like within your career, something that's paid off is the fact that you are willing to take risks. Mm. And as you just said, you haven't had a very linear trajectory when it comes to work, which I do think is kind of the modern millennial way. Like, we don't tend to come out of uni and sit in a job and stay in it for the rest of our lives. But I do think that you kind of know when good things come to an end and when you're ready to move on.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's maybe a really, really one of the most important things to know when it comes to careers. Because I think, especially as women, we think, well, I'm so lucky to be here. And if I only just stay another 4 years and maybe they'll give me a longer maternity leave. So I better not up and leave in case I want to. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? And I think that mindset can be actually what holds people back from traversing into a whole new arena. And was that something that you thought about consciously, or did the opportunities just arise that allowed you to kind of job hop? Because that is quite unusual, but it's evidently done you very well. And I actually think sometimes people would do better just walking away from something. But you do get stuck in the safety of it. As you say right now, that uncomfortability you're feeling is because you feel like you haven't got a stable income and you haven't got the safety of a community. And
I think the courage of your conviction is one of the most powerful tools that you can have. I was really, really fortunate when I was younger to have parents that were like, you can do anything. And I was like, I want to play badminton. And they were like, let's go play for the county. Or I was like, I want to be a dancer. And they were like, go and do ballet. And then I got kicked out after the second session because they were like, you're so shit. But they were really, really supportive and kind of instilled this mindset in me that, like, the only thing that is stopping you is you, and the only limit you set yourself is yourself. So every role I went into, and this was especially relevant when I was in Los Angeles, I really believed that I had a lot to offer. You know, I have a lot of things, a lot of issues like everybody else, but in this particular time of my life, I really thought I was really good at what I did, and I really believed in that. And I took a one-way flight to LA, and I didn't know anybody in the city, and my parents didn't give me any money. I took out a credit card and was like, okay, I've got a $5,000 max. I'm going to see how I go. And the clients that I worked with and worked for, they believed in me because I think I believed in myself.
Yeah.
So when they'd be like, oh, what should I do, you know, with this article or this comment's come out, or I'm launching this brand, you know, what should the comm strategy look like? I really believed that I was right. And I'd had this incredible training at Freud's and this sort of brilliant experience there that because I've been exposed to so many senior thinkers, which I think a lot of junior people don't do. They don't go up to, you know, the vice presidents or the CEOs or the directors and say, like, hey, I know you're really busy on this pitch, but I really respect you. And I was wondering if you could come and have a coffee with me for 15 minutes. Everybody says yes. But we just don't have the confidence to do it because we feel inferior. In actual fact, you're not inferior. You're just less experienced. And the only way you're going to get that experience is by taking advantage of all of the knowledge around you.
So Matt's very good at that. He does the exact same thing at work. He's constantly speaking, getting in meeting with people. And the weird thing I've realised is being freelance, weirdly, you do that because you have to, because you have no colleagues. So you have to find people who are like mentors and be like, how do I do this? How did you get there? And it's not got that same environment where I think you're right. In a workplace environment, you feel like, right, I'm the little person here. Yep. I can't go up. That's going to be really embarrassing. I'm just going to keep my head down and I'll slowly work my way up.
Mm-hmm.
But then you're not really setting yourself apart because everyone's the same cog in the system.
Yep.
So I do think that's really important. I do want to ask you a bit about your publicist days in LA because I feel like you had some very fun clients. Can you tell us about them or not?
Yeah, sure. So I moved to LA. I Googled a bunch of PR agencies. Like, the stuff I did was really easy. Like, honestly, anybody could do this. Like, there was no special maneuver. There was no contact I had. There was no cash I had in the bank. I went to LA and I said I worked at Freud's and this is what I did and these are the accounts I worked on. I was lucky enough. I keep saying I was lucky enough.
I know.
I worked on accounts at Freud's, like Airbnb and Vodafone and Burberry's London Fashion Week. So I had loads of kind of big name clients. Yes, I was doing, you know, very junior stuff for them, but that kind of caught the attention of this woman that owned this agency. She was British. She moved out when she was 25. And I sat in a conference room with her and you know, she was like, why should I hire you? And I was like, well, why not? I mean, I'll work really, really hard and I'm quite nice. You know, I'm not one of these like bitchy publicist people that, you know, sadly the industry gets a reputation for. I love to work. I really want a really robust career. And yeah, I'm keen to do anything. And she was like, yeah, okay, fine, you're great. Like, I'll sign your visa and I'll pay for you. I think, yeah, and I think she had been around a lot of people that work for the agency that were really looking to befriend the clients or get to the parties. And really, I was just like, I just want to learn and I want to grow my experience. And so the first client I had, I'll actually send this to him, was Gene Simmons, who is the front man in Kiss. I actually didn't know who Kiss were, which is really embarrassing. She was like, they're a rock band. They're one of the biggest rock bands in the world. And he has just bought a football team called the LA Kiss out in Anaheim. Sick. And you have to go and launch it in Orlando at a press conference. And I was like, right, is this football with your feet? Or they were like, no, it's American football, so it's with your hands. So firstly, I was like, cool, don't know the sport. Cool, don't really know what he's like or what he does. And I remember my director at the time, I was like an account manager or senior manager. He was like, I've got, you know, my wife's having a baby, so like, can you just go on your own? And this was like week two in LA. I remember being so anxious, calling my mum, being like, I can't go to Orlando on my own to meet this guy and to run a press conference and then a red carpet and then a dinner with the whole of Kiss. And my mum was like, you're just going to have to wing it. You're going to have to say you can do it and you're going to have to make it up. So I start Googling, like, press conference, how many people at a press conference. I literally just taught myself. Dawn, who was the CEO and my complete inspiration in life, was actually on maternity leave. So she'd gone. So she'd hired me and gone. So this amazing woman that I'd, like, flown all this way for wasn't even there. And I rocked up in Orlando. I remember we were at this hotel and there was a Zumba convention. There was a Christian convention. And there was a pet convention, and then there was this conference. And I managed to get a press list off a friend of mine who does global PR, and I did my bunch of research, and I wrote these documents that I'd seen my bosses doing at Freud's. And I rocked up, and I remember my mum said, just make him like you. Just make him respect you. Go in with an opinion, and you know you're good at what you do. You've been around loads of senior leadership. And so I just did. And I went and met them all and I shook all their hands. I was like, this is what I do. This is what I think you guys should do. Like, this is how we're going to... I knew the format for doing this stuff. So, like, populating it with American football or this band, you know, I kind of knew how it worked. And then I just kind of used my common sense, which really most jobs are about. Like, if someone puts their hand up in a press conference room, you want to make sure that they're CNN or CNBC rather than some tiny Anaheim newspaper. Or if someone says, I want to have 30 minutes with Gene Simmons backstage to ask him about it, you know, my common sense was saying, okay, let's try and get it on camera because we know that broadcast is better than digital at the time. And so I just started making these decisions. And as I made more decisions, more people just listened. And it was a really interesting experience in terms of, like, if you can convince yourself just to do the best that you can, and you can put yourself in an environment almost like a, you know, you make it up and you're like, I have to do this. It can only go one way. And then from there, it sort of, it all went really well. And we did the event and Jean fed back, you know, we think Louise is great. And she was really professional. I think professionality is a big piece of this. And then I just started getting other clients. I worked with Paris Hilton and Nikki Hilton, Cesar Millan, who was a dog whisperer. He's massive in America.
Was Afrojack. He on Real Housewives of Beverly Hills once? I'm sure there was a dog whisperer on
Probably. He is the mecca of dog whisperers. So, yeah. Yeah. Worked with Afrojack and a bunch of other DJs launching their albums. And yeah, sort of grew my confidence through all of those different roles. And I think that the talent that I worked with, we had a really mutually respectful relationship because I always had my professional hat on. I never was like, let's be friends. It was always, I'm here to do a job. I'm going to do the best job possible. And I think that attitude is definitely what helped me kind of grow a reputation of that.
I think you're so right about the idea of being thrown into the deep end a bit, because I think what can happen in jobs is there's so much hand-holding and so much, not necessarily hand-holding, but you kind of, because we get so fearful of doing something, you never know if you can do it if you're not trying to do it. And on a very small scale, the kind of same thing happened to me with the podcast. I was like, I really want to do it. I don't know how to do it. And then I just one day said I was going to do it, and that was it. I had to do it. So I had to buy a microphone, set it up, and did it. And then it was fine. And now I'm good at it. And now people ask me how to do it. But it wasn't until I just was like, well, I've just got to fucking do it, that I didn't get it out there. And I think that's one thing with, like, careers and things. People do ask for lots of advice. And like we said, it's good to ask for advice, but sometimes you've just got to figure it out on your own. And I get people messaging me all the time, even about, like, my book club. And I kind of think, like, just part of the learning and part of making it yours is working out how you're going to do it. Mm. Because if you kind of copy someone else's format or you try and look at how something's been done before, it probably won't, it might not end up being as good as it would be as if you kind of put it and figure it out yourself.
Yeah.
And then you'll imbue it with your own kind of personality. But I think we get scared sometimes that we've got to do it. And I think this is part of the social media kind of YouTube culture where there's a kind of tutorial for everything in the world and everyone wants to know exactly where your outfit's from and exactly how you did that. And I think that you've sometimes just got to wing it and do it the old-fashioned way and, like, not be so scared of things going wrong, because in a lot of people's careers, and especially for me, like, so many things went wrong before they went right. Mm. And then when they go right, they just stick.
Yeah.
But people only ever see the bit that it goes right, obviously.
Because that's all people talk about.
Because that's the success. Because you're not going to see, obviously, if someone writes loads of books, you're only ever going to see the book that gets published.
Yeah.
So you'll be like, oh my God, they got published. But for all you know, that's the 20th book they've written.
I mean, I did 100 things wrong also when I was in LA. Like, it's a, I really should, I'll send this to Dawn, but like, I should, really should thank her for not firing me. Like, as much as having loads of success and figuring it out in the end, there are always going to be ruptures along the way. And actually, your attitude to repairing that is so much more important. I remember when I had a team, when I was working with a team at Bumble, saying to them, like, it's so much better if you come in and you say, okay, I've really messed up this event. This is what I did that was wrong. This is what I've learned. And I think this is what we'll do next time. There would never be a problem if someone's attitude is like that. I think when there's no accountability or responsibility taken for certain action, that's when it becomes tricky, because you're always wanting people to learn. That's all that this life is. It's just like banking learnings. That's why when we mess up, it's so brilliant, because it's like you would never have learned that if it had just been plain sailing.
You're right. And I know this is kind of like a different thing, but there's a saying where it's like the only true apology is changed behaviour. And when it comes to mistakes and things, I do think that's the same kind of thing. Because if you bury your head in the sand, you're like, well, I'm just not going to deal with that now. You never have a chance to grow. It's kind of off topic, but I think the same with like cancel culture. I think we all get very scared of making a mistake because the stakes seem very high if you get something wrong. But if we don't allow for each other to make mistakes, what we're saying is you either get it right first time or you're out. And that's not how it should be. It should be that you get, like, you move 10 steps forward, you go 5 steps sideways, and then you go forward again. And it's never linear progression.
Mm.
But I don't think that's the story we get told these days when it comes to success. And everything is like, the stories we get fed just seem, I feel this so silly. I'm 25, I'm 26 on Friday. And I'm like, oh, fuck, I've missed my window. Like, I feel like, you know how there's like 30 under 30 lists and they do the like...
Yeah, but all of those 30 under 30 lists are curated by people who know people that work at those publications.
Yeah, mate, but do you know what I mean? Think in creative industries, you feel like... You've got to.
Why don't we do our own one?
It.
Why don't we do our own 30 under 30 for your podcast? Let's take action and change it and pay it forward. Honestly, all of these things are manipulated and considered, and they're very smart about who they pick. I don't think we should be worrying about that stuff.
No, I don't want to be worrying about it either, but I think that we all are also like looking up to where to get this right idea of what success is. And actually, I think why I want to talk to you as well is because I think it's so interesting that you like walked away from Bumble, which probably at that time was like your biggest career. And then now you're like, I've got another thing happening. And then even at the bottom of all of that, when I've asked you like how your work was, your success was never driven from the fact of, like, as you said, the label of your job. It was the fact that everything together worked nicely and made you happy.
I'm such an advocate for, like, believing that, like, life's happiness is just a collection of brilliant moments. So when I was working at Bumble, it was like, well, this is such a brilliant day because we've just come up with this amazing campaign and Jamila Jamil's going to be in it and we're going to help loads of women that feel lonely and the team are really inspired, and then we go for after-work drinks, and then I'd get home and be like, that was a good day.
Yeah.
And like that for me, when I look back now, sat here, I don't look at my job title or like the interviews that I did. It's about all of those moments that we managed to help all these other women and men find each other. And in the end, I'd sort of felt like I'd done everything I could for the company. And the next kind of wave of leaders needed to come in and take that baton and take it forward. And that's why right now is a really interesting time for me, because so many people have been like, can't wait to see what you do next. And I'm like, oh my God, what if I just want to go and work in the shampoo shop opposite my house? Like, will people be like, oh my God, that's what she did? Or will people be like, that's really cool. She just ended up doing what made her happy.
I think that's, I guess, one of the things we haven't spoken about as well is that we, unfortunately, we forget to look inside us, as cringe as that sounds, and we base a lot of our ideas around success around how other people are looking at us.
Yeah.
So, like, whatever label that can be. So, for instance, I might cringe if someone calls me an influencer, but if someone calls me a podcaster, I think it's really cool. Mm. They're kind of one and the same, and I do both things, but I'm so influenced by how I think someone else perceives me. If I get a taxi, I never say I'm an influencer, so I'll say, oh, I work in journalism or something. Mm. But if I'm at a specific party where I know that they might think an influencer's cool, I'll say that. Like, I constantly adapt. And we're much too worried about what other people think, because realistically, I have the best job. I love my job. Mm. I've done things I could never believe I could do. I was things I would never believe that I could speak to. And I never once hate my job. But then all of a sudden, someone asks me what I do and I balk. I'm like, oh my God, I don't know what to say. Whereas I wish we could just be like, I don't know. I think it's, the question needs to be rephrased. Like, I think we look at things in the wrong way.
Yeah. But also it's almost like we just project our own version of stories onto everyone else instead of look at reality. So, like, I'll read an article on Business of Fashion about influencers, and it will define them as X, as people that are launching podcasts, that have fashion brands, that do capsule collections. And then that will be the story that I carry forward. And when I talk to you or a friend of mine, I'll be like, because you work in this industry. That's just a story that I've taken from someone else's story that's probably come from someone else.
Yeah.
So it's almost like we all need to try and just like park all of that, really. I mean, I love the label of an entrepreneur. I think in essence, it's someone that starts something and innovating and trying to start something new in their own space. And that's what you're doing and you've done. You decided you wanted to do a podcast about relevant and really cool issues. You did it. And it's successful. Like, really, that's just what an entrepreneur is. Well, nowadays, you know, when we think of entrepreneurs, we think of Emily Weiss at Glossier or Mark Zuckerberg. Why do these people have to be so successful?
Yes.
It's just someone that does something and it's brilliant.
Yeah, it's so true. I do think, the definition of success as well, I do think it's because of the internet and social media and things. But we need to kind of, like, strip it back and not have such big... Because also, it kind of feels like, maybe this is London, maybe this is my industry, but I feel like everyone is doing amazingly.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like I can't turn my head for another person being wildly successful. And I think we forget to look at in of ourselves and just go, oh my God, look what I did. Like you said, that amazing day at work when you're at Bumble.
Yeah.
And be like, that was amazing for me. We never really know what anyone else is doing.
No.
But we do just make up all these stories in our heads. Like, I love being on the tube and I'll see women in their suits and I'm like, I bet she's a lawyer.
Yeah.
I wonder what kind of law she does. Probably saves people's lives.
Probably and I'll
be like,
done her.
In my head, I'll be like, shit.
Yeah.
I just made it up.
Yeah, it's so true. But that's also, I mean, I do that still all the time as well. Like, you know, I see someone do a keynote speech and I'm like, oh, I really want to be like her. And then she's like, I'm the VP of marketing for a brand very similar to the brand that I worked for. And I'm like, oh, is that what I look like?
Yeah, that's
so interesting. Because I feel like a 12-year-old that just like, you know, got lucky sometimes. But actually, I don't know, I feel like sometimes that way of thinking pushes us forward and inspires ourselves like to do better. But I think going back to what you're talking about in terms of like defining success and career trajectory, like I think it's really important that you take stock about what makes you happy and what your hobbies are. Think about what you do in your free time that makes you feel really, really good. If it's playing tennis or if it's writing music or if it's reading, and actually try not to follow this traditional kind of archaic educational system, which doesn't even teach us about moral issues or societal issues or kindness or any of those pieces, and try and lean into that and then look at the industries that you can employ that kind of skill set in, as opposed to think you have to go and be a marketeer or a doctor or a banker, because there are so many opportunities.
Yeah, I completely agree. And also, but the other thing is, in this generation, is everything becomes a side hustle. So I start doing something and the minute I start doing it, I'm like, I wonder how I can monetize this. Like, how can I turn this into a business?
Yeah.
And that gets really scary. But you're so right. Exactly what you just said then is exactly how, same as you when I was growing up, no idea what careers you could have. I just thought everything, you would just be a teacher. So if you did chemistry, you'd be a chemistry teacher. If you did English, you'd be an English teacher. Same as you again, went to like careers counselling thing, and they were like, oh, you're going to be, my mum was a nurse, my dad was a doctor, so they're like, you'll probably be a nurse or a doctor. So I then was like, oh, right. So I was like doing 4 A-levels, trying to like get all the sciences in.
But how weird that we trust those people.
I know, and it didn't make any sense. And if only I'd known the careers you could have. I love presenting, I love talking. I wish someone at school was like, you don't stop talking, you should maybe think about getting presenting. But instead,
all my
school reports would be like, she does not shut up.
Yeah.
Like, they'd be like, really, really smart, doesn't stop talking, like not one point. And sometimes I think you've got to look in the most obvious places to find the answer. So it'll be staring you right in the face, like you might be amazing at doing your makeup every day and then going into the corporate job and be like, I fucking hate this. And then maybe you should, do you know? And I think I'd rather, in that scenario, say you're amazing at makeup, working in a corporate job that you hated, I'd rather go and work in a makeup store, work my way up in a makeup brand, do something to do with makeup, than go to work every day in a job that I hated that people around me were like, wow, she's really successful.
Yeah.
Because as we just said, that isn't what success is. I think, as Louise has said, your dream job isn't about the job. It's about the job that creates the dream.
Yeah, yeah. But also you can really craft roles for yourself. And I also think that is often forgotten. Like, even when I remember when I started in LA, you know, the job was pretty straightforward. It was like do reports, pitch in whatever we were launching brand-wise or collection-wise, you know, take all that content, put it in another report, send it to the client. And then suddenly I started thinking, like, why aren't we offering marketing services? And, you know, why aren't we offering crisis communication support? All of these people do things wrong all the time. Like, these are really great revenue streams. And then we can offer an integrated approach. Like, that just makes sense in my head. And instead of just being like, okay, this is my job and this is exactly what I have to do, if you can take to the senior team, like, hey, this is a long shot and you don't have to listen to me, but I've thought maybe this would be useful because this client mentioned that they didn't have it. And actually using every day and access as an opportunity, any leader or any business leader wants to hear, like, hey, have you thought about this? Because we could probably make some more money. And even if it's the wrong answer, that attitude, like, I would encourage anyone who is in a junior position listening to this to go to their boss tomorrow and have a think tonight, like, what else can we offer our clients? Or, you know, from a services point of view, go with an idea to your boss. And I will pay 50 quid to anyone that is listening to this that the boss comes back and says, that's a shit idea. Any boss would be like, that's a great attitude. Yeah. Like, let's have a meeting about it. But people just don't do it because it just hasn't been done.
Yeah, and everyone starts somewhere. It's a bit like in the gym when you think, like, oh my God, I'm never going to be able to do it. But the guy that's lifting whatever, he didn't walk into the gym and lift that weight the first time.
Yeah.
You've got to train up and you've got to believe in yourself. And also, I think new, fresh voices, people are doing it more, but we do have ideas. So I'll say something to someone that I think is more senior than me, not even necessarily in the industry, but just in life, and think they'll be like, obviously. And I'm like, oh, I've never thought of that before. We do all have really different perspectives on things. And sometimes you might think your voice isn't important, but a lot of the time, like you just said, it could actually be exactly what someone needs.
There's also, I totally agree with that, Nones, and there's also the point that there is space for everyone. I think there's a lot of fear and angst at the moment, especially with the younger generations, of like, there are, you know, on Instagram, you're just completely bombarded with successful people, you know, doing posts or getting paid for things. And it looks seemingly like everyone's getting paid to do everything. And if you're sitting on Instagram with 100 followers, you're like, oh, but how am I going to launch this jewelry business from my bedroom when so-and-so has a jewelry business and has a million followers? And I think there's something to remember that, like, every single year there's a new generation of consumers and there's a new type of consumer and there's a new need. And there really is space for everyone. There are millions and millions of brilliant small businesses, and there's a demographic for everyone, and there's a specific pay price point for everyone. And I really believe that, like, we have to keep generating ideas to innovate and drive our society forward. So never feel like, oh, but I've only got 50 followers and I want to be, you know, an Instagram person for these reasons, and I'm not going to make it. If you have enough passion, enough focus, and you understand your audience, their profile, why they purchase, who your competitors are, what that landscape looks like in terms of monetization, you just have to do your due diligence. And you can get a lot of that information either online or from other accounts. But I really believe, as long as we are all open, there is and there should be space for everyone to create.
Yeah, and another thing that I've learned is that you're never more successful than when you're only focusing on your own success. Because if you waste time and energy looking at what other people are doing, as in thinking like, well, I'm never going to be like her, or I'm never going to be able to do that, well, they've done that, okay, well, I'll think of something else. If you try not to focus too much on what anyone else is doing, you just focus on your own thing, it will take off and it'll get traction. But as you say, especially as women, we're like pitted against each other and we can't see the wood from the trees. Yeah. We're like, but actually, if you just focus, you'll never do something. Someone could start a podcast called Adulting and invite the same guest on and they'd have a completely different conversation. It doesn't really matter. You're always going to be different from someone else, and you'll always have something valuable to say. I completely agree with that. And you do just have to, like, focus on yourself. And success to someone it's always different. It always means something else.
Yeah, it's completely relative. And also it's relative to your upbringing and your experiences in life. And that's why I think Instagram can be brilliant, because it can really inspire you in ways through content that perhaps you haven't had access to see before from wherever you're from around the world. But I think this sort of anxiety and this fear of like, there's so much great stuff out there, like, will I find a place? You have to just get rid of that entire sentence. Mm. There is a place for everybody on this planet.
Totally.
Sounds very profound. I didn't mean it like that. I mean more, there is space for more creative ideas consistently. Consumers will consume forever. And it's just about really dialing into what you're offering, why you're passionate about it. And I really believe that anyone can be successful.
Amazing. I actually think that's been a very uplifting and motivating chat.
Should we go and start a business now?
Yeah, I think so. So if people want to find out more about you, is there any way that they can visit you?
I mean, I'm reluctant to give my address, but if you know where the shampoo shop is, come pay me a visit. Obviously, I'm on Instagram. If anyone needs any advice or is struggling kind of in the midst of their career, I'm more than happy to kind of jump on the phone with people. I do that quite regularly.
Amazing.
Louise Trowan. I do not have a website because I don't need one.
Amazing. Thank you so much. And I look forward to seeing what your next move is.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for coming on. Thanks for listening, guys. Bye.
Bye.